four, three, two.
Congratulations. You have made it to the end of this class. You'll notice this is last leadership session 36. I've entitled it Final Thoughts. Now, I've been giving a lot of thought to what do I want to say in this last session here with you. I thought I would just look at some maxims that have been helpful for me, maxims about leadership. You know, maxims are those pithy statements that take an idea and they just put it down in a memorable way. You know, one of my favorites is Dwight Eisenhower, who one time during the World War II got his generals around a table and put a string on it. And he says, try to push that string to the other side of the table. And of course, it was difficult because once you try pushing the string, it folds around and sometimes comes loose. And so he said, no, the best way to get that string to the other side of the table is to pull it. And he says, so the maxim is you always pull people, you don't push them. In other words, you've got to engage people, I guess in terms of what we've talked about, engage people's feelings and engage people in a commitment to what they are doing and talking about. So I thought I would do that sort of thing. But I've decided to go a little different direction for tonight, for this session. But first, let's remind ourselves where we are. We've been talking about this model of leadership for a long time. And that is a leader enters a group of people who have a culture, and the culture is defined as the way we do things here. And that leader engages the people in that culture to help them define a preferable future, and they get a vision for that preferable future. And then the leader rolls out that vision, and he also provides the impetus for the prayer and the planning that are needed in order for that preferable future to become a reality. Or here it is in the words we've been using. A leader with all of his pluses and minuses, strengths and weaknesses, interacts with a group of people to define the culture the way things are done here in order to develop a vision for a preferable future, and then provides the impetus for doing the actions necessary to bring about that future with plans and prayer. So we've been talking about each section of that for a long time. We talked about the leader, who you are. And if you started with the intro class, you know that we talked about all of the kind of things that affect you as a leader. There's your personality. And so you've got to be thinking about the personality. We talked about personality tests you could take to help you do that. There are certain styles of leadership that you have that are ingrained in you. There's baggage you have from your background, your family of origin, and that impacts how you are a leader. Your birth order even affects how you act as a leader. And so we've looked at all of those things that would impact you as a leader as you come into a cultural situation, things you have to be aware of if you are going to lead well and not just push people, but pull them forward into the future. Then we talked about culture a great deal, the way things are done here. We talked about how culture you can look at in a macro setting as well as in a micro setting, that you look at the big culture. And so we looked at the culture of the United States. We looked at how it's changed over a period of decades. And we looked at the place of the church in the culture of the United States. And I asked you to apply that to your own particular setting. We looked at the subcultures and had some wonderful interviews, generational culture with John Burden and with Maya Clark, looking at, you know, the ethnic cultures and here in our area, the African-American culture, and what she's doing in order to change that culture and how she's providing education. And so we talked about culture and the fact that you've got to define the culture where you are, and I've given you tools to do that, how you look at the values of the place, the written documents, the physical manifestations of where you are ministering, and how all of those contribute to the way we do things here and the way things are done become important to people, and they become kind of set in concrete. And then we talked about how do you develop a vision for the future then? How do you engage people in looking beyond what is to what could be? How do you identify that that statement of urgency that will allow people to see there's a need for change? And then how do you put that into words in such a way that's compelling? And so you roll out the vision. We looked at all of those kind of things. Then we looked at change theory and how this is going to involve change. And then now we've been talking about strategy and strategic planning and how strategic planning has to consider various things like spiritual warfare, like prayer, those kind of things. Well, all of that's in the past. Tonight, in this session, I simply want to talk to you about the why. great movie in the United States. It's become an iconic movie, is The Blues Brothers. It's a 1980 movie, so it's an old movie, but it's about the two Blues Brothers, played by Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. Jake Blues gets out of prison at the beginning of the movie. They are two blues singers, by the way. They're brothers. His brother Eldridge is there to pick him up from prison, and they decide to go visit the person they call the Penguin. It's a nun at a Catholic orphanage. They were raised in an orphanage, and this Catholic nun was somebody that was very important to them and precious to them, had cared about them, loved them, so they go to visit her. And they find out from her that the orphanage is in great peril. The school there, the orphanage, every part of it's in great peril. That unless they can come up with money in 11 days, the place is going to be repossessed and shut down. And so the Blues Brothers sense that they are on a mission from God. In fact, that's a phrase that they repeat over and over and over again. We're on a mission from God. They say it to the police. They say it to the bad guys who are chasing them. They say it over and over again. We're on a mission from God. We're on a mission from God. We're on a mission from God. They decide to get their blues band together and hold a benefit concert and raise the money necessary. And so the movie just talks about them getting their old band together and how they do that and the people who are against it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's that phrase, we're on a mission from God. We're on a mission from God, and they could define that mission very well. We're on a mission from God to save that school. Now, related to that, put that on the shelf for just a moment. We're going to come back to that. Related to that is a teacher, consultant, researcher that has helped me a great deal. It's somebody in a business world, not in the Christian world necessarily, but he relates to the business world. His name is Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K. And he did a talk years ago that's called Start With Why. He developed what he calls the Golden Circle. Now, the Golden Circle is made up of these various elements. First of all, on the outer circle is the what we do, you know, what the results of our work. And then the next inner circle is how do we do it? How do you do what you do? And the why is why you do what you do. What is the purpose behind it? What are the beliefs? What are the values behind it? And what he said in his talk about businesses is that businesses usually start with the what. And he's found over and over again that the most successful businesses don't start with the what, they start with the why. And he gives several examples. Apple Computer Company, for instance, he said when they started, they were like many other computer companies in the sense that their job was, the what was to produce computers. But most other companies back then, Gateway, Dell, etc., always began with the what when they were trying to sell their computers. What does this computer do? This is our computer. This is how much memory it has. This is what its capacity is. This is the variety of things it can do. They start with the what. Now buy our computer. It said, Apple turned it entirely around, and they began with the why. They said, we are a company of innovation. We are always looking to think differently. And so we are always trying to come up with the best, the most ingenious plan that we can to produce a computer. Now, how do we do that? Well, we provide unique designs. We provide a unique operating platform. And the what is, here it is. This is what it will do. And he says Apple, you know, blows everybody out of the water when it comes to selling computer. But not only that, they were able to expand their business because their what wasn't we're producing these computers. That's what we do. Because they started with why, they could say, well, we can expand it to telephones, you know, cell phones. And they produced the iPhone, which became an instant hit. They produced all of these other things, the iPad, the iPod, the Macintosh, et cetera. All of these separate things they could do because we're a company that thinks differently. You want to join us in thinking differently? Are you somebody who wants the best and is looking for the best and the most innovative that you can have? And they cite other companies that did just the opposite. They started with a what, and they said, you know, we're going to sell flat-screen TVs. Gateway Computers tried to do that. Failed entirely because they were a computer company. That's how people interpreted them. Dell Computer Company went through a difficult time. They tried to expand their business. And every time they tried to expand, it didn't work beyond computers because people thought of them as a computer company. And so he constantly says, you've got to think of why. If you don't, you're destined to failure in business. They've used TiVo. Now, maybe you're not old enough to remember TiVo, but TiVo was an incredible, innovative design when it came out. It was a machine that would allow you to tape programs so you didn't have to be home all the time. So your TV would tape the program. You could cut through, skip commercials. You could do all that sort of thing. It was an incredible thing. But people tried to sell it on the basis of what? Look at all these things this TiVo machine will do for you. And it was a disaster. It didn't sell. The company went belly up. He said, what a difference it would have made if they had started with the why and started asking things like, are you a person who likes to control your time? You know, are you somebody who likes to control your time? Well, let us tell you how we've arranged for you to do that. We've built this machine, and here's the what. Here's what it will do. But starting with the why. Now, that talk was something that was powerful for me. In fact, I went back to my staff after I'd watched it on YouTube, and you can find it there. And we simply talked about what is the why behind what we're doing. Now, in a church, we can often talk about the what, right? We can talk about the what till the cows come home. What do we do? Well, we've got this children's ministry, and we invite you to bring your children to our children's ministry because, you know, we're going to take care of them, we're going to educate them, we're going to love them, and we're going to love them the way you love them. So come, bring your children to our children's ministry. Or we do youth ministry. You're concerned about your teenager? We've got a great place for them. Or, you know, we do this thing. We provide a social relationship place for you, and we can quickly do that. In fact, I find myself even talking about that when I was strategizing with a group of people about ministry to the senior citizens and saying, what do we do? Well, people need friendships when they retire and they move to our community. So, hey, here's what we do. We provide this group, and you can come there, and there aren't any expectations, and you can become part of something that will lead to friendship in your life. What you do, and we so seldom talk about the why do we do this. And so the big question is, what is our why? What is the ground level of why we do what we do? Now, we've talked about leadership. Why do we lead? Why do you put yourself in situations, you know, in that session that I did about the price to pay and the dark side of leadership? Why do we put ourselves out there where we've talked about the fact that, you know, leaders are the ones that are shot first? Why do we do this? Now, we can talk about what we do, and that's been most of this class. What do we do? But why do we do it? Now, some have found the why in the answer of the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. The Great Commission is, you know, go into all the world and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe what I commanded, and lo, I'm with you always to the end of the age. And the Great Commandment, you know, love God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Those are wonderful whys. Why do I do this? Well, I do it because I have met Jesus Christ. He's made a difference in my life. I've given him my life. And I am willing to take any steps he leads me to take. Another teacher in CLI, Steve Elzinga, has written a book, and I'm sure it's in one of his classes, about Titanic. The Titanic was built in 1912, launched in 1912. It was going to be the unsinkable ship, right? And lo and behold, on its maiden voyage across the Atlantic from England to New York City in the United States, it hits an iceberg, and the iceberg gashes it so that it's doomed. It's going to sink. And so they start launching the lifeboats, and that's when they start finding out that there aren't enough lifeboats on the boat to save the 2,200-plus people who are on the ship. There's only enough lifeboat space for 1,200 to be saved. And so they begin launching the lifeboats, and the rule is that, you know, men and women first. Now, women and children, excuse me, first. And so women and children start loading into the lifeboats, but because everybody's in a hurry, the ship is starting to list, the lifeboats are launched before they're full. And so the lifeboats are directed to start rowing away from the ship because when it goes down, it's going to cause this sucking sensation. So you don't want to be near when this place goes under, when the ship goes under. And so the lifeboats row away. But what was fascinating about the story about the lifeboats is that most of them were not filled to capacity at all. In fact, here's a picture. The Carpathia, was a ship that came, the first ship on site after the Titanic sunk, and they were rescuing the lifeboats. But here's a picture of one of the lifeboats. And you'll notice that if you count all the faces in there, you'll come up with about 20 people in a lifeboat that was designed for 40. And so the lifeboat was not full. There was a phenomenon that they noted, the survivors, and that is that as the lifeboats rowed away, they didn't go back to pick up survivors. Now, there were reasons for that. Some people were scared that they would be overwhelmed, they'd be swamped with people trying to get in. But there were 700 people that could have been saved if the lifeboats went back. But none of the lifeboats, except I think it was one, went back. And that struck me. That struck me because I'm part of a church, and sometimes it's compared to a boat. In fact, I went to a pastor's gathering years ago for Promise Keepers in Atlanta, Georgia. And I remember the speaker, Max Licato, was the speaker that night. And he, just before he began speaking, I was talking to the man next to me, and he was from a denomination where we have some theological differences, let's put it that way. And so I began the conversation by saying, you know what, I've got a young man who was in my office just last week, and he was telling me about the fact that he's dating a Nazarene girl. He was from the Church of the Nazarene. And so he wondered what the differences are, and so we talked about all the differences between you and me and da-da-da-da-da, and we began to just highlight some of them. And then the talk began, and Licato made this picture of a ship going through the waters, troubled waters, and there's all kinds of people in the ship. But instead of throwing out life rings and hauling people aboard, the people on the ship are arguing about what the seating capacity should be and what the seating system should be and who gets what chair and who gets what sense of honor and place of honor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just very convicting for me because I realized that sometime along the way, I had begun to lose my why. Why do I do this? It happens in the church. It happens to leaders. In fact, my brother once told me a story. I think it's a fable, but maybe not. Along the east coast of the United States, there are various exclusive clubs. Only the very rich can get into them. And turns out that for many of those clubs, there is a similar story of their beginning. They began as life-saving stations. People very early in the history of the United States noted that at certain places along the coast, there were objects that would made it likely that there could be a ship that would founder there. There were reefs, there were that sort of thing that a ship would hit. And so they established life-saving places. And here's a picture of one of them back very early in this, in the 1900s. And the idea was when the word would go out, these volunteers would come rushing, they'd get their boats out of the life-saving station, they'd get their boats in the water, and they'd go and rescue as many people as they possibly could. But over a period of time, people began to think, you know, this is cool, we should get together more often than just when we're out there in the lifeboats. And so they put additions on, they built nice buildings, and they created places where they can meet. And there they would have lectures about, you know, life-saving techniques and how to handle your boat better and all those kind of lectures. And after a while, people would come for the lectures and the food, and fewer of them would show up when the call would come out to actually rescue people. And after a while, they said, you know what, I'm really kind of tired of this running out there, getting too old for that. You know, I'm too engaged with other things. And so they would hire people to do that for a while. And then after a while, they would quit paying them. And what you've got is a nice club that used to be a life-saving station. And I thought about my church. I thought about myself. In my first church, my goal was to see people meet Jesus Christ. Why? Because I had met him. I had met him. He had come to me, and he had shared his love with me, and I had gotten to experience his love in a powerful, life-changing way, and I wanted others to experience that. Now, unfortunately, I grew up in a church that didn't teach me about that a great deal. In fact, you know, life-saving was not part of it. Even in seminary, my training was to take care of the people in the lifeboat, not go and find more people to bring in. And that training, you know, stuck with me, except that I had experienced people coming to faith. I'd experienced in a music a group that I sang with, sang at an honor camp, and we saw people come to faith in those situations. I went on a summer's missions program and got to see people impacted by the gospel, the good news that Jesus Christ came to save them from their sins, that God loved them. He wasn't angry with them. He loved them. He wanted them to come to salvation. Got to see it happen. So that became a big part of my why. And in my first church, wow, we got to see people do that. That little tiny church, people coming because their lives were a mess. and they were looking for some solution, and they were afraid of God. They were ridden with guilt, and to share with them the good news. And I got to disciple those people. Some parts of it I didn't do well. I didn't know how to do leadership well. But some of that activity on my part lessened as I got into my next church, where I had to learn to lead. And now I thought, well, okay, the life-saving part is lesser than I've got to lead this group and lead them through that relocation for 7 years, and it was about trying to hold the group together. It wasn't about bringing new people to a relationship with Jesus Christ. And so I had to rethink my why, and even now in retirement, I'm starting to think of why. Why do I do this? Why do I do what I do? And I figured it out. I figured out why I do this. It's because I have experienced forgiveness of my sins through Jesus Christ. I realize that my theology is right. Now, my theology was probably always right, that I'm saved by grace through faith in Jesus Christ. And that God came to me not because I was such a good kid or a good person, but he came to me simply because he loved me. And he offered me salvation in Jesus Christ. And now I've experienced that. And I want to share it. And I want God to create a passion in me for sharing it. So a passion that will drive me to be engaged in things like this. You know, my hope is not that your organization will just reach some new level, but that it will be more impactful for the kingdom of God. That's what we leaders are supposed to be doing. As we do that, we are serving the people around us, because we are people who have been impacted by the love of Jesus Christ, and we're compelled now to be people who are witnesses of his love in our area and out to the world. And so I want to close this session on leadership by simply asking the question, what is your why? You can become a great leader. We've looked at some in those early sessions. Great leaders like Stalin, like Adolf Hitler. You could probably name some great business leaders who created havoc in their wake because their why was just about money or just about getting ahead or just about getting people's approval. Spend some time with God and figure out what is your why. And when you do that, then live it out with a passion. The why of Jesus Christ as the head of his church, and you get to be part of the wonderful process of him building his kingdom until he comes again and says to you, well done, good and faithful servant. So thank you for spending time with me, a lot of time with me as it turns out. And now bless you. My words to you are blessings to you in the name of Jesus Christ as you lead in his church. May you experience his power working in you and his love flowing through you so that the world is changed, because everything rises and falls on leadership.